This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
Cast number 6. I'm Pete Schermacher. We're dwelling with Johnny Sorrow and the returning from his honeymoon, Kelly Nelson. Johnny, Kelly, how you guys doing?
I'm doing quite good, quite good. This coming weekend, we wrap Anything Goes, so that's exciting. But fuck all that shit. Italy, man. Come on.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I love Europe. I've been there several times. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be there several times, and I just love the culture and then just the way they do things there. You can walk around and drink beer all day in public, and no one cares. So that's my
Sounds like my kind of place.
Yeah, exactly.
It's my, like New Orleans, yeah.
It's my kind of place, too. So, yeah, that's – I drank a lot of beer, ate a lot of pizza – and soaked in the sun and had a blast with my wife. It was awesome.
And a big shout out to our boy Parv. Got it, what, engaged this weekend?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Second time's the charm.
He's getting back on that horse once more onto the breach.
So if you guys hear him on a podcast anytime soon, that probably means his relationship is up in smoke. So.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, well, he's not watching wrestling much anymore, so I think maybe this one will pan out for him. Yeah,
because I mean, we met Parv when he was going through right at the beginning of his divorce, and that's when he started podcasting, was because his relationship was going down the shitter.
Jesus Christ.
Here's some behind the scenes stuff for the.
This speaks volumes, and this was public knowledge, but I remember he was on vacation with the first missus, some beautiful place like maybe you were at, and he was watching wrestling in paradise. I think this one put her foot down.
Yeah.
This one wants to spend time with Parv, so that's a good thing.
Yes. Congrats, Parv.
Congrats, buddy. Parv. Yeah, congratulations.
But hey, let's get into some wrestling. Texas wrestling.
Oh, boy.
And this is, if you're following along, this is WCCW, episode 12 on the network, March 13th, 1982. And we get the combination of Mark Lawrence and Kevin Von Erich. So, Kelly, since you weren't with us, do you miss Gene Goodson, or are you ready to go forward now?
Well, I mean, Goodson was pretty bad. Lawrence, he's got no personality, basically. The personality of a dry dishcloth. But he's better than Goodson. He's articulate. He knows what he's talking about. He doesn't sound like he's totally lost. But the problem is the guest color commentator, is, you know, this whole thing has been an issue since we've started this. And Kevin Von Erich is, I think, the nadir so far for color commentator. Oof.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing we've noticed, we've only had David Von Erich guest commentated once.
Yeah.
And we've only had him on the show, I think, that once.
Yeah.
I believe he's been in Florida this whole entire time, I'm guessing. We're doing his heel work with Dory Funk around this time, I'm guessing, huh?
That's what I think. Yeah, I know he did Florida. He was also in Georgia, too, quite a bit, wasn't he? So.
Yeah, because he almost feels like Chuck from Happy Days at this point in time, you know?
Hey, Chuck died in Korea, and they just don't talk about it.
Okay. A reference I think Johnny loved. But hey, let's get into this deep dive into this episode. And we open up with Captain Dusik versus Rimpaglagolo, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin couldn't say it.
Hey, I'm sounding like Kevin. Now, Kel, what were your feelings on this match, man?
I thought it was a solid little bout. You know, Dusik, he's over as a heel. He got a solid round of boos. He's basically doing, and I think I mentioned this before, like a Buddy Rose tribute act, because he worked in Portland before this, and I think he soaked up quite a bit of Buddy while he was there, because he's got the bumping, the stooging, even like the mannerisms. When he's backed into a corner and he's pushing his hands out, that's a total Buddy Rose pose. And of course, he also has the body of Buddy Rose, basically. But he's no Buddy Rose. But and we've seen quite a bit of Jesse Leone, Relampago, or anyway, flash of lightning is what it translates. I had to look this up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So let's just say flash of lightning now, and stop trying to butcher the Spanish. It was a quick, like, there's a million of these that we've seen already. Pretty quick match, meant to keep Dusik strong as you know, sort of the mid card top heel, I guess you would say. And yeah, I thought it was a solid little bout. Nothing more than that.
Yeah, Dusik's one of those guys, and you know, I like your Buddy Rose comparison. Because he did work Portland a lot and probably saw Buddy work and like, hey, I'm like a lot of these veterans, I'm gonna lift this guy's shtick a little bit here and take it with me to this territory and see if it helps me get over. Yeah. He's that guy who's that good veteran who will always have a good spot because he's a solid worker, good heel, good talker. Not a top heel talker, but a guy who could make a living in the territories back in the day. And you saw Dusik go work all over, from Georgia to Portland to Texas to Houston, and a whole lot of other places, because he just what we were just saying and stuff. So, Johnny, what were your thoughts here?
Well, first, before the match, you got fucking Lorenz and Kevin, who's in his gear because since we're getting used to the fact that the color commentators have to get involved, you know, this one, Kevin actually has a match later. So they're going over the card, and Kevin's all mumble mouth and shit. And they get to we're gonna see Ric Flair, you know, and it's gonna be Flair versus Richard Blood, and Kevin mumbles his way through finally getting to, he's like, well, I just think, you know, my money's on Flair. Oh,
big, that's true. Big, really? Bold prediction there.
It was a bold prediction, you mumble mouth dum-dum. This saga of, I'm glad you found out what that meant, Kelly, because I thought that was just part of his real name. But they're saying Ranelli, who you can barely hear here, and it's a shame, but we'll hear him later, next show. Because again, the mic, you can't hear the ring announcer. No. The ring announcer microphone isn't mic'd right. You know, they still got a lot of shit they got to work on. But it's Rampago.
Yeah, it's never said the same way twice.
It's almost like Parv back in the Titans day announcing the Hispanic names all the time.
Hispanic names, right.
Yeah.
Well, it gets to a point where Kevin's trying to say it, and he goes, I can't pronounce his name. and Lorenz goes, it's Jesse Leone. Just like, he's basically just saying, just say Jesse Leone. Yeah. And Kevin goes, oh, and he goes, well, Ramp Leon here. I'm like, oh, he just, and Lorenz goes, okay, let's move on, basically. And then Lorenz mentions, he goes, well, you know, if you're watching in black and white, you know, the colors of Dusik's robe. And I'm like, ugh, don't see. I get it. At this time, probably lots of kids watching wrestling on their black and white TVs in the room, like I did when I was this age. But you don't need to say that. If you're watching in black and white, is it really that important? You're sitting there watching this in your room, you know, on your little black and white TV, and you're like, I wish I knew what Frank Dusik's robe, the colors are. Thank God for Mark Lorenz. Ugh.
Yeah, you rule people in Texas. I mean, that's almost healing in a way.
You just don't mention it. You're like, yo, I feel bad enough that I have a black and white TV in 1982. You got to make it worse. So Bronco Lubitsch doesn't see something in the ring, the heel tactic or something. And Kevin goes, well, you know, Mark, I couldn't see it either. Yeah, you're not in the ring. That doesn't help anything. Kevin calls the move that all the Mexicans do, Again, he calls it a Mexican flying tackle, and we made fun of that in an earlier show. And I thought about it, I'm like, as far as being culturally sensitive, it is better than flying burrito. You got to choose between one or the other, you know. And then the only other thing I have is Lorenz gets in this call, and I just had to add my own thing to it. Because UCLA, we always hear stories about what a dump the Sportatorium was. But they always never shot it so you could see that. But they always talk about how it was just that those tin walls, you know. And there's a shot where you see it and everything. And he goes, oh, the whole building shook. I'm like, he's like, seriously, this place is a dump. It shakes with a stiff wind. But it just – when he just goes, it's Jesse Leone. I die laughing. He's trying to throw a life preserver to Kevin, and Kevin ain't grabbing it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, you know, I think Leone, my thoughts on the matches, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think Leone kind of has been the best worker so far on what we've watched footage-wise when it comes to having decent matches, you know?
Most consistent, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, he has good fire. He sells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's not lighting the world on fire because, honestly, the wrestling's been, you know, pretty terrible. But he's been, like, the best of, like, the shit group. But, you know, which is good. It's just like, you know, the guy just never really got a push. And you kind of wonder what he could have done if they pushed him a little bit, maybe. Who knows? And I did like you said, I like Dusik's healing. I thought his timing was well. You know, he's one of those guys who he just had a good fun and just knew the fundamentals and knew how to work. He just didn't look like a star. He didn't walk like a star, but he had a robe that looked like a star.
Yeah, it wasn't the unicorn robe that I liked from the previous show. Kelly, I know when you were on your lovely honeymoon, we were waxing poetically about how good of a solid ring mechanic Frank Dusik was until Pete pointed out how bad is this that we're sitting here going, look at Frank Dusik.
Well, I know. I mean, well, you got to work with what you have. So, you know, now we don't have much.
Spoiler on Frank Dusik, in a couple episodes, he does color. And he's by far the best color guy we've gotten. I'll tell you that.
I would imagine.
Yeah, I can see
that. And that leads us into the next segment, which is a Nature Boy Ric Flair promo. And Johnny, man, why don't you tell us what's going on?
All right, so Ric Flair, in full 1982, his hair's all feathered. You know, he's got the sports jacket that matched Lawrence's pants from a few episodes ago. But it's Ric Flair, so it looks cool. Again, this is his first reign. I don't know. I was taking that into consideration. This is Ric Flair's first reign. Yeah. Depending on who tells the stories, there were some people that felt it was a failed one. But seeing him at this point putting together what is going to become Ric Flair traveling NWA champion is very interesting. And you know, because of course it's Ric Flair in the middle of fucking Jesse Rampago and all this stuff. There's Ric Flair, you know, so you're going to perk up for that. Yeah. And he addresses the whole uncrowned champion deal. This very confusing thing about he pinned Harley Race, but you know, there's a cloud. We'll get to the cloud. He's awesome. He's not all the way there yet, but he's real close. And he's hitting all the numbers that he would hit. Put over the NWA title. Put over the NWA as the best organization, and then put himself over and, you know, tell Kerry Von Erich he's got a body like a Greek Adonis, but you know what he's going to do. And I'm enjoying it. I'd like to see more of 1982 first reign traveling Ric Flair and watching him put together what would be that total package come 84, 85 when it's at its a peak. And then you got Lorenz. Fucking stone faced. So this is Ric Flair. He's the world champion, and he's being braggadocious. And there's not a look of like a Mean Gene. Nothing. He's just stone faced, and all he's doing is he's judging him inside, like the minister that he is, because this man is just represents everything. Fornication and partying and cockiness, and Lorenz is just silently judging him. And then he goes, that was the world champion, Nature Boy Ric Flair. was like, way to sell it.
So Johnny, here at this point, Ric Flair recently was quoted that he has had sex with 10,000 different women.
Oh yeah.
How many women do you think he's had at this point in his career?
Well, let's see. He's $2,000, I guess, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's a. Does he have a contest with what's his face?
Wilt had.
Yeah, with Wilt Chamberlain.
Wilt had 20,000.
20,000. Someone actually did the math on that and figured that it was completely impossible.
Well, totally. Yeah,
Flares. They did flares, and it was like he was averaging 178 a year.
Now I got to bring this up because. You just sparked a memory. This old message board I used to hang out at many years ago, someone came up with this thread and this idea, this theory about this, about all the women Ric Flair had sex with. So he made an entire scientific theory about the possibility that Ric Flair might have fucked your mother.
Not mine. But,
I wonder if he gave himself bonus points for orgies in, five ways.
Well, when all those rats show up, when he goes on TBS and tells the rats what hotel to go, do you think he's taking them one at a time? Not the Nature Boy.
Mountain. That's right, baby. Uh-uh. Kelly, what do you think of the promo?
Well, I'll get into the promo, but I'll talk about Rick's 10,000 women first briefly. Okay. It's wrestling, so everything's exaggerated, right? So, I know he once said he wrestled Wahoo McDaniel 3,000 times. But if you look at the record, it's more like 500, right? So I think
He said Steamboat was like 3,000 or 5,000.
Yeah, Steamboat and Wahoo. But maybe it was Steamboat that he said 3,000.
You know, when he gets Alzheimer's, he's gonna start telling people he fucked Wahoo 5,000 times. Really uncomfortable.
Yeah. So if you use the same sort of exaggerated math, I think that's maybe the real number for Flair's conquests. The promo. My first note was, here's a goddamn star. We're basically in a sea of mediocrity right now in early 1982 world class. And here's Flair. Like, he's head and shoulders above almost everybody else. Or I guess everybody else, basically, at this time in world class. He's the NWA champion. They going to Lawrence, no selling him. The way he was introduced at the top of the show, it's like, NWA champ Ric Flair's here, and he's in a meaningless match in the middle of the card. The way they introduced it at the beginning was like, it was no big deal that Flair was, the NWA champ was even on the show. It's like,
you're right, Kelly. You think they would be pushing like, ooh, we have a special treat. The NWA champion, world champ, is wrestling on TV.
Yeah.
Or even mention, because then when I'm not spoiling anything, when we're going to get to the match next, and you see that Kerry's out there, I was like, and Kerry Von Erich will be in the corner of Richard Blood. Oh, okay. Because it was all an angle. But no, it was just Ric Flair, the NWA world champion, will face Richard Blood.
Yeah, well, it was matter of fact. It could have been anybody. They need a few pointers on how to push stars. But Flair, of course, came off great here. And this is kind of, in hindsight, we'll see. This is kind of the beginning of something that leads to business start to pick up for world class, because Flair and Kerry is the main feud later in the year that really starts packing Reunion Arena and stuff in Dallas. So yeah, we've seen the first glimmer of hope or light at the end of the tunnel or whatever, that there's a spark, yeah, that there's a chance with this ragtag group of misfits in Dallas.
Yeah, and then you kind of like see, hey, actually, you can just see it here where they always talked about how the NWA champ would always pop a house, and you can definitely see it because it's like, man, I'd pay a ticket to see this guy.
Oh, totally.
You look at him, and he has the scar tissue on the forehead.
Yeah.
And he's clearly to me, channeling Broadway Joe Namath. He's coming across like Namath was with the Jets. I could definitely see Namath as a big influence on career on a young Ric Flair at a young age type of thing when he was probably growing up in high school or something.
Right.
Uh, being Namath. You can see a lot of Namath in him here, with the charisma and the outlandishness and stuff like that.
Right.
I see a lot of Namath here. And that leads us to the Flair versus Richard Blood, which, you know, you're hoping it was Ricky Steamboat, but we've already clearly we've discussed Richard Blood. It's not Ricky Steamboat or Tito Santana. What'd you get out of this one, Kelly?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, this is where we, like I was saying, the first spark we get Kerry in here, basically. Well, not even challenging. He tells Flair that the NWA has already ruled that Flair has to come to Texas and defend the NWA title against him. So, and then like it sets up right, you know, before the match even starts, Kerry gets, you know, him and Flair go at it, and Kerry gets a visual 3-count pin, or maybe even like a 5-count pin.
A 4-count. It just keeps getting higher as they.
Flair, I think of all the people for Flair would ever go into, it always seemed like in Texas he was just prostituted like a motherfucker.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it worked to make Kerry look like a major star in, you know, in his hometown. He pinned the champion, essentially. And then we get the match, and you know, Kevin's still, you're horrible on color commentary. He calls Flair the world champion of the world at one point. and Flair, of course, he's always giving with everybody. So Blood gets in a bit of offense, but it's basically a squash match. And yeah, I mean, like I mentioned before, this is the first spark in the turnaround, I think, as we see, you know, the seeds for Flair versus Kerry being planted here for the first time. And yeah, here we go.
Yeah, I totally agree. What about you, Johnny?
Now, this is just an example of why Gary Hart's right about these fucking Von Erichs. Okay, so Flair's in there, Richard Blood. Kerry comes out, and he's saying, well, let me tell you, Ric Flair, basically the NWA said you have to, and I want that now. So fuck you, Richard Blood. You know, this is a chance to fucking, you know, wrestle the world champion on TV. Maybe in a scientific match, but oh no, because what happens with Kerry here? And Kerry's disrespecting the champion in the ring. He's wanting his way immediately because he's a spoiled brat like the rest, like they all are. And then when he takes off, Flair, it keeps grabbing him because he's telling him off. He's like, listen, you punk kid, I am the world fucking champ. And then Kerry flips his lid and beats up Ric Flair, who was not ready for it. And then throws himself and makes himself a 3-count. Kevin's on commentary going, see that? He's the champion. No, he's not. No, he's not. Oh, you fucking fuck you.
Thanks, Jesse. He sounded like Ventura explaining stuff.
So, and then again, like you mentioned, Lorenz is like, I think it was easily a 4-count. I think it was a 5-count. Fuck you. It was nothing. It was no count. Kevin, in his robotic voice, goes, oh, Ric Flair is mad. And yes, he is mad. He's taking it out on Blood now. He's taking out his pissed offness, his anger at the Von Erichs and Kerry in particular, on Blood, and Blood's taking a beating because the only offense I recall him getting was maybe a punch, you know, for like 2 seconds, and then Flair just kicks his ass. Then they get in, you know, like, oh, Richard Blood is a young man, not like Kerry. Kerry's not a young man like Richard Blood. I was like, well, yes, he is if you see the acne, and Blood looks older than Kerry. I'm sorry. And then, because of Kerry, like I mentioned, Flair's mad and beating shit out of him. Kevin even admits it. He's like, oh, yeah, Richard Blood's really getting it because of how angry Ric Flair is about what happened with Kerry. Yeah, you think? And then this was weird at the end. And Flair gets on the mic. I wish we could hear what he was saying. Yeah, in the beginning. And when he's leaving and he gets on and he gets that crowd pissed. And I wish I could just hear what he was saying to get that crowd crazy. But right before that, what at first I thought was a big fat chick in a red suit comes strutting down the ringside to like strut at Ric Flair like you're a big sissy. But they turned around, there was a cowboy hat. So I mean, it was a dude. But it was hilarious because she stands out. and walks all the way down there just to strut like a sissy at Ric Flair and struts right back.
Yeah, she's a regular. I'm pretty sure it's a woman.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And she's on multiple, or she's in multiple.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Look out for her.
Yeah.
But yeah. And if you're saying I sound like Jesse, that's a compliment, sir.
Yeah, well, with the logic, anyway.
Well, that's true. What part of that is not true?
Well, it's all about having to try to draw a house. And that's exactly
I'm not
what
talking about drawing a house. I'm talking
kayfabe. They want you to believe that Kerry has a chance to win.
I mean, and I'm talking about why the bad guys are misunderstood and the Von Erichs here are the real bad guys.
And then the same thing would happen when Earthquake jumped on Hulk Hogan and put him out for months. I mean, they wanted to try to draw a house.
I know, but that was clearly that Earthquake, did something evil and dastardly. The Von Erichs were in the wrong in this situation.
Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the confrontation. I especially liked how he has to come back and wrestle in Texas. And I like how they, because they want the fans at the time. Title changes didn't happen too often, so they wanted the fans to think there might be a title change.
I know why they did it.
Texas. Oh, he already pinned he's already pinned Ric Flair. Oh, he's pinned Harley Race. I mean, so they're definitely building up Kerry for it. So I really thought it was a good piece of business to pop a house.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Then that leads us to the Fritz and Kerry promo. What do you make of this, Johnny?
Just speaking into my Now, again, what I'm talking about, how much I'm disliking the Von Erich story, has nothing to do with backstage, nothing. I know why they do all this stuff. This is me getting into it as how I would think watching this and how I am thinking. So Francis Carey is out there. Carey is out there and is still into doing his the roach clip and the sunglasses. And he's got a knitted gold headband around his hair. And Fritz, you know, Fritz hates it. You know, he hates it. And he's just letting it. Okay. Because that shit doesn't stick around for much longer. And, you know, he's so Fritz is standing there and Carey's got to cut a promo. And he's cutting a promo about this thing. It makes no fucking sense. And he starts saying, and you're saying that they're saying there's a cloud and that I'm a cloud. Well, I'm not a cloud. And there'll be no cloud. And I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then Fritz goes, well, let me get in here. Markin. He's like, and he tells the Harley Race story and uses the word, well, there's a cloud over the, you know, whether or not, you know, there was a legitimate championship change, you know. Okay, so, you know, basically, he took him aside and, like, mentioned the cloud thing. You got it, Dad. And he just comes out and mumbles, I'm not a cloud, you're a cloud. And Fritz has to go, God damn it, and save it. And then he's like, and Carey's going to be the next world champion. Now, isn't that right, Carey? And he goes, yeah, Dad. I'm like, ugh. That's not cool. He's like, and I'm going to get so hyped when the rock and the roll starts. And, you know, Fritz is like, oh, no, this rock star thing has got to go.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said here, Johnny, because it's clearly Fritz redid the promo.
Clearly.
And it's funny because, like, Meltzer used to write about how when Bruiser Brody was the booker for World Class, because the dumbasses couldn't get the promos right, he was always out there with them and then have to recut the promo for him after the promo. They cut themselves. Just horrible. And this is exactly what that happened. This is.
But if you're watching this,
recutting it.
But if you're watching this, I'm sorry, and I get it. Maybe if you're from there and you love this family or whatever, but if you're watching this from the outside and you got this guy and his big dad is sitting there going, my son's going to be the next world champion. Ain't that right? And he's like, yeah, Dad. I'd be like, I don't like you. You know, I don't like coaches like that. Don't, you know, and that's like the little league coach who like favors his kids and shit.
Yeah.
it annoys me.
But I mean, it's like they have a history, like because of Carey's shitty promo skills. It's almost like in his first feud with Flair, Fritz really took over the promo. Oh.
Of course, we talked about the famous split screen.
Yeah, you know, and it's just, and this is like stage one of him taking over. Kelly, what do you think of this like train wreck in a way?
I made the same notes as you guys. We've already discussed. Basically, yeah, I mean, Carey looks like, wow, was he just in Los Angeles or something like that? You know, having a lost weekend, a lost month there.
Who'd he steal that headband from, Cher? Yeah.
It's just crazy to see this, all this stuff, like I said, I wanted to do the positive, you know, tribute to the Von Erichs, but you keep getting these friggin' scenes where Carey is blasted, can't even form a coherent sentence. I'm proud to be the cloud.
That was it.
Yeah,
I'm proud to be the cloud. And, you know, he loved that. He's like, I mean,
oh,
rhyme.
Yeah.
He does like to write poetry. Yeah. Come on. God.
But yeah, Fritz had to cut the promo for him. Like, you know, he gave Carey a chance, but Carey was going nowhere. And then Fritz just, well, I've done this a million times. Let me step up. You know, usually he was cutting promos for himself, challenging for the NWA title, but whatever. They'll still work. I mean, Carey was a star. Carey looked great. Carey was a great worker, actually. He just, you know, at this time, and I mean, he didn't really ever develop into anything special on the mic, but at this time, he was really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, he was green and you know, he was green and with no experience cutting these promos.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. He just didn't have the experience also, and, you know, well, we'll see how it goes. But no, it's really rough at this time, but funny and good for us and good for the show too.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought Roach Clip Carry only existed in Florida, so this has been a major revelation.
Yeah.
I think part of it right now is they don't really care about. I mean, they care, but don't really take it the right wrong way. But at this point, they're just trying to get out product. Where I think maybe in a year or two, they wouldn't put some of this shit on the air, and they'd actually redo it 5 or 6 times until he got it fucking right.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and as far as appearance goes, Carey eventually figures it out. And, like, he's the only guy I remember who wore the short robe, and it looked good on, you know, and he got good gear, and he didn't fucking do this Roach Clip bullshit, and hey, I'm a clown, and, you know, he just became a very, not a great promo, but very just keep it simple.
Yeah.
And he developed his look, and I'm not just talking about that body, but I'm also talking about his robes looked cool, everything looked cool, he had a great presentation eventually.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, except every now and then he'd still do a dumbass maneuver, like showing up with doing the Kevin gimmick with the no shoes. At one point,
he did that. He did that.
Oh yeah, we'll get it. We'll see it eventually.
Maybe he just forgot them. You know,
and it was like in '83 in a tag match, and rumor has it Frisch wanted to kill him. But this leads us to the next match of Al Madrill, Tom Boogaloo Shaft versus Kabuki and Bundy. Kelly, what'd you make of this match, man?
It's a great cast of characters here. We're seeing the slow evolution of Bundy into the Bundy we all know and love. I mean, he's ditched the jeans and the rope belt. So he has the black singlet, but it's still got the long pants on it. And he still has the hair, of course. So the pieces are slowly... coming into place for Bundy. The crowd was really fired up for this one, actually, and fired up for Madrill in particular. He's kind of one of the resident favorites for them. But, you know, when Tom Schaff got into the ring, though, the match came to a screeching halt. He's just subpar, definitely.
You can say it, this shit. Subpar is being
That's an insult. That's an insult to people who are subpar.
He's the drizzling shits. How did this one end? We had some screwy ending, didn't we? Shaft got pinned, but of course he did the kick out at 3 BS. I hate that. Like, what is, who is he? I'm fucking
Tom Shaft. Hey, Tom Boogaloo Shaft has to protect himself.
He's got to protect himself. I hate that. And then he no-sold the kick, Kabuki's kick, basically, and just got right up and, I'm fine. Total typical, like, 80s, I'm doing a job, but I'm really not doing a job finish. I just really don't like that. Not much of a match otherwise.
I'm with you. I don't understand it. Why do you think there's this love for Al Madrill here in Texas at this point? I don't see if he does the phony smile.
Yeah.
He's not a great worker. He's an okay worker.
He's better. I'll tell you why. He's better than most of the people on the roster.
Yeah.
He's younger. If all you're watching is this, and if you listen to Mark Lorenz, that's what you're supposed to do. Don't watch anything else. We'll get to that. Al Madrill looks like a bit of a star. It's Tom Boogaloo Shaft, you know, and Richard Blood, and you know, and Jesse's a very talented wrestler, but he doesn't really have the look. And Al Madrill's kind of got the look too of the day, you know, and he's got charisma. So I think that's definitely why. If you're going to that show on a weekly basis, you're going to find somebody who's decent to get behind, and he is.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's kind of like the a big fish in a small pond type of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And then in '83, we'll see him totally get down, move down in the card.
Yeah.
Because that's when the Freebirds and Chris Adams and some real talents.
Well, I'll tell you what exactly happens to Al Madrill. Iceman King Parsons happens to Al Madrill because he arrives to take that part in that role.
There you go, that too. So, yeah, it's interesting. Johnny, what are your thoughts here on the match?
Okay, so apparently Tom Boogaloo Shaft just got back from visiting Tijuana. He just got back from vacation because he's wearing a fucking serape and a sombrero. And I'm like, I'm going to get over with the Mexicans in the crowd. Hey. Hmm? Hello. Okay. You guys just paused on me for a second. Of course, Kevin mentions that Bundy worked on Alaska pipelines, and maybe that's another reason they hate him.
By pause, did you mean not laugh? Or?
Yeah, well, no. My Skype. Yes, that's what I meant, you dick. Really? Okay, you didn't look at Tom Boogaloo Shaft wearing a fucking sombrero and a serape and go, why? What the fuck is this about? Jesus Christ. But again, they mentioned that Bundy worked on an Alaska oil pipeline just to piss off the Texans even more. Not a Texas oil pipeline. It's one of those Alaska fuckers. Can't trust him. He forced his way into the business. Lorenz calls the green mist the green slime, which immediately made me think of the toy they used to sell in the 70s and that game show they used to have on Nickelodeon. But again, they can't get their story straight about just exactly how much vision Fritz Von Erich lost, because this time it was 1/4.
Yes.
It's been 32 down to 26. Now down to 1/4.
Oh, no, so we had 20% also.
Was it 20 also?
Yeah, there was 20 at one. Yeah.
It's all over the place. Yeah. You know why? Because he's not injured. You know, I'm not even talking kayfabe size. He's not injured. He's making it all up. I don't trust these Von Erichs. He gets to the call. Good call. I'll give Lorenz credit. He goes, down goes Shaft. And I was like, credit where credit's due. That's a good call. And he says, Shaft is smashed. And I'm still going to go there because he was in Tijuana. Of course he was. And then Kevin says, don't ever estimate Kabuki. Underestimate him. And then he immediately goes, hey, man, Mark, I got a split. I got a match coming up. I got to warm up. He says, I got a split. It's the most genuine he is in any of this, trying to do something he doesn't want to do and he ain't good at. And he just has to say, hey, man, I got a split. I got to go warm up for my match. And he sounds natural.
Yeah.
And you got to figure, as stilted as they all are in promos and stuff, I bet you when they're all just hanging out behind the barn smoking a joint with each other, they probably, you know, they're talking just like anybody else.
Yeah.
It's just put them in front of a camera. And he calls a bear hug a body lock, which was interesting. And then I just heard Tom Shaft stinks. He's awful for a great name, but he's – oh, and then he does the thing. And I didn't see the three count, the kicking out thing. But he gets up, and Al Madrill looks pissed off to the point where I'm thinking, because he's like, oh, you know, they grabbed me and they cheated, Al. And I was looking at him like, you're a dick. And I'm like, is Al going to turn heel here? I don't remember this. Because he looks like he's going to jump him. He totally looked like he was going to jump him, and he doesn't. And so maybe he's showing signs of the eventual heel turn that he does. And then I was thinking about this, Pete. I was like, we watched all this Houston, and this is Dallas. I'm like, what is one of the differences besides match quality? Okay, that's the given. But the feel of the show, and I get it. The Houston show feels, and I know it's going to sound silly, but you know what I mean. It feels more cosmopolitan.
Yeah,
it feels, you know what I mean? It feels, Paul Bosch, even in his big old suits and everything, the presentation feels big time, feels big city, and it feels more cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
In a southern way, let's say. Whereas this just, and not just the level of the talent, the presentation just comes off as, you know.
Yeah, this is like, this is,
it'll change.
World class comes across as FFA, which is like
Future Farmers of America.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's perfect. They're the Future Farmers of America, and the stars or whatever the opposite
is. Whatever that is, yeah. I this match really did nothing for me. I mean, come on. Boogaloo Shaft is the shits. I do like the trope what they've developed now where, like, the color commentary is gone by the final segment every show we've been on so far. It's almost like the Saturday night main event tropes of when they go to a commercial break type of thing. That's why the matches are always like 2 out of 3 falls, or there'd be a big angle, big fight, and they go to a commercial break while they're fighting in the aisle or whatever type of thing. So who knows? But that leads to the main event of this show of Kevin Von Erich versus Carlos Zapata. Kelly, take it away, man.
I don't have much to say. I mean, it's the first we see of Mike Von Erich. So.
Yeah, Mike Von Erich sighting.
Yep. But this was a dull match. I didn't like it at all. Zapata is about as Cuban as I am. extended squash. But Kevin's body scissors is impressive though.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that's my only positive comment for this, because otherwise this was nothing.
Yeah, I used to in St. Louis, and I've seen. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Kelly or Johnny, where they'd actually do explain the psychology of the leg scissors on St. Louis wrestling.
Right. Yeah. On Larry Matisick. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't. What do they say? Okay, what do they say?
Huh?
What do they say? I haven't seen that.
It's kind of like he does leg scissors and like crushes like flower bags or something like that, isn't it? Something like that.
I just remember him actually putting it on Matisick, you know, in the center of the ring, and it was. Yeah, it was something, all right.
Does he use the same sex that Mr. Wrestling 2 uses to train people?
Yeah, they redid it, yep. Oh, Jesus. What would you make of this match there, Johnny?
Again, of all the Von Erichs watching in the ring and everything, Kevin has always been my favorite. Kevin, whose gear does look good, by the way. That's why he stinks with that look for the rest of his career. But there's Mike, and I'm like, what? They're already prepping this kid? Oh, that's just no chance. This kid's never had a fucking chance. And he looks, with the haircut, his age, what is he, 12? 14?
I think he was maybe 18 or so. Yeah.
18? Oh, he looks young. Looks younger than 18. But, he looks, between the fashion and the look on his face and the haircut, he looks like every guy or kid who'd appear on an episode of Facts of Life to, like, take Blair out. The atypical early 80s sitcom TV kid.
Okay, Blair Waldorf would never, ever go out with
Joe? You think Joe?
Maybe. Well, no. Joe is always into the motorcycle guys.
Yeah, well, these Von Erichs have a bad. Yeah, they
got
a bad.
Maybe Carrie, not Mike. Mike's like a poet.
Well, yeah. Well, Carrie's a poet.
Then again, I can see Joe as kind of like a dominatrix.
Oh, I might Jesus stick Christ. That tampon. No. That's Natalie, big time. That's Natalie. That's all Natalie right there. Now, that's actually Mrs. Garrett. She's got the leather fucking whips and shit. But, so
Tom Boogaloo Shaft is what I'm
who gets Tom? Well, I'm not going to say Tootie because that'd be racist. But I was talking about Carrie. Carrie would be too old for them. I'm talking about that first season.
Okay.
Right after Molly Ringwald.
Get some of them girls in the stadium.
Okay.
The aisle. Such thing as too young for Carrie.
That's true. Apparently, after Kevin's promo from the other show, yeah, you got a point. But yeah, he looks like every extra in a background scene on Silver Spoons. Then, you know,
there you go. I'll buy that one. That's a good
okay. Then I referred to this before, real quick, because the match sucked except for the finish. Lorenz says, he's like, here in 1982, professional wrestling is growing in popularity all over the country, all over the world. But there's no need to go anywhere else. I assure you, all the best are right here for you to enjoy. It's like he's reminds me of the end of the Wizard of Oz. Like, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. He's like, yeah. All that other wrestling on the other UHF. Don't even look at it. Don't. No need. I'm a minister. Would I lie to you? All the best are right here. I was like, ooh, that's a lie, sir. It'll give it a year and a half and you can make that claim, but not right now.
No, not even with Flair on the program.
No. Yeah. The only thing I got out of this, which I loved, was Kevin getting his hand raised while he had the body scissor on.
That was cool.
That was cool. Other than that, this is a nothing match, which I would be ashamed to call a main event anywhere in the United States.
They do results. Like, why?
And that's another episode of WorldCast, folks. Episode 6. This is WCCW, episode 12, March 13th, 1982. Kelly, man, you got anything you want to plug before we head out of here?
I guess. Yeah, I got something in the works. A show about the unreleased DVD that the WWE just put out. And myself and a mystery guest will be doing a Mount Olympus episode on it in the coming weeks. So look out for that.
Ooh, intrigue.
Nice.
Yeah.
Johnny, anything you want to plug, brother?
No. I just wanted to mention the last thing. As they were going away with Mark Lorenz, I looked at him. I'm like, his nose is skinnier than Michael Jackson's was at the end. It's creepy.
And he says he's still standing in for Gene Goodson.
Oh, yes, he does. He does.
I picture Goodson having a nervous breakdown, basically, at some point, driven by Fritz. And at this point, he's in a hospital recovering, and they're, you know, maybe he can come back.
Yeah,
he's walking around in a bathroom,
like on the old soap operas, where the nephew would just go up to the attic and never come back, but they talk about him every now and then. And that's what Gene Goodson is.
Well, clearly he was still, I guess, you know, maybe available. Otherwise, I don't think they'd mention that he's standing in for Goodson. So
I totally agree. I think they spent 2 weeks without Goodson and realized, well, Lorenz is better.
What? I think Lorenz. No. Fritz is just torturing Lorenz. He knows he's got the job, but he's like, well, be sure you mention you're filling in for Gene.
Yeah.
Just keep it so you don't get cocky.
That's highly possible, too. Yeah.
And, man, for me, CWF FanCon, October 13th and 14th. Come on down. Check it out on Twitter at CWF FanCon. You can also check out John Filipavage's Twitter and JB Bryant 025. Check out all the details. I'll be doing a podcast or two there. CWF Rumble. They're going to be defending the title in the Rumble. Super excited. I'm going to be there. I'll be drinking some beers. It's going to be a fun time. So if you're in the area in the Carolinas, come on out to the CWF Sportatorium, Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium, Friday. We're going to have a buffet there, and we're going to do some Q&As. And then on Saturday, it's going to be some stuff all in the morning, and then it'll be the Rumble. So go check out those Twitters I mentioned. They'll have all the details there. It's going to be a blast, guys. Come on out. And everybody, man, have a great week. We'll see you next week.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms, waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.